Online shopping is easy and convenient, and the Gun Dealio smartphone app makes it inexpensive, too. Deals on guns, ammunition, holsters, optics, lasers, and more, available day and night. Load the Gun Dealio Apple or Android app today at GunDealio.com.
Hey, welcome back to Gun Talk. Tom Gresham here. If you'd like to join us, that's pretty easy. You just call me, 866-TALK-GUN, or call Tom Talk Gun. That's me, Tom, and I talk guns. Tom Talk Gun, that'll get you in here. We don't do focus groups. We don't do test groups. I actually don't ask anybody what I should do with this show or who I should put on. I figure I've never done it that way. When I was editing magazines, I did not have focus groups. I didn't do tests. I did what I wanted to do, and I'm going to do that right now. And this is a little bit off topic, but I think it's on topic. It's important. We are the gun community. We're the folks who have guns, who own guns, who use guns, who store guns responsibly. And we also, for the most part, we like to try to take care of our own. We like to try to take care of each other. We'd like to try to help. Let me bring in the author of a new book. The book is titled Warrior. The author is PhD Dr. Shauna Springer, Doc Springer. Doc Springer, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Tom. It's good to talk with you on the radio show today.
Absolutely. Now, your specialty, I gather, is working with the military, with veterans, PTSD, with loss, and all the rest of it. Is that pretty close to accurate?
Yeah, I'm a psychologist. I'm a trusted doc in the military and first responder communities. And I walk with warriors.
Title of your book is Warrior, How to Support Those Who Protect Us. What's that mean?
Well, you know, as a psychologist, I think healers, we want to do the best we can for those that we support. And the conversation about firearms and the possibility of suicide
right.
is one area where there's a really deep disconnect with a lot of healers and the people that they support. And so in my book, I really wrote about this cultural gap and how we can get over it to really get aligned on what this conversation is really about.
Well, and you and I talking actually came about through the National Shooting Sports Foundation, which has been working on that very thing. The idea that, look, if you're going to talk to people in the gun community or are going to talk about suicides, particularly suicides with guns, because 2/3 of gun deaths are suicides, if you are a professional in this world, you need to have some kind of intersection with people in the gun community, right?
Right, right. So, for example, you know, one of the huge disconnects is that many clinicians are not familiar with firearms or the culture of firearm owners. So I think they often fail to understand the emphasis on safety that's core to the values of firearm owners. I was trained as basic firearm safety certification in one of my jobs several years ago, and I actually enjoy shooting.
Okay.
So I don't think I'm an expert markswoman by any means, but I'm not afraid of firearms. I really enjoy shooting firearms, and will find myself in groups of Marines. I'll share with them, you know, here's how you have a good fight at home with your spouse, protect them from your rage, and then they'll take me out and we'll go shooting, and it's a lot of fun. But the conversation that we typically have with warriors, I think, really needs to get a second look.
Okay, so what is the conversation you have? Well, first of all, let me back up and ask you a really impossible question. What is PTSD?
Sure. Ah, PTSD, post-traumatic stress. Now, I think it's actually an injury.
Okay.
I've been in this field for 20 years, and sometimes people think of PTSD as this mysterious thing.
Right.
But it's actually something you can see on a brain scan. So I think when you get exposed to trauma, it causes an alteration in your biological functioning that shows up on brain scans. And so people get locked into this chronic state of fight or flight. And sometimes the ways they navigate the world, their relationships, it changes because of what happens to them after trauma exposure.
Okay, and you deal with veterans who have had severe injuries, you know, physical, emotional, PTSD, all the rest of it. What I want to do is get to where our listeners, it's kind of the old, what's in it for media, what can I do? How do we, as the gun-owning community, or we who may be friends or family members of veterans or police officers or people with PTSD, what do we need to do? What do we need to know?
Yeah, okay. So to me, there's a lot of alarming statistics out there about suicide loss. And I always remember that every suicide loss is the loss of someone who's irreplaceable to those around them. And firearms owners love people that own firearms. And in the perfect storm of stress, a firearm meant for self-protection or protection of those one loves can become a weapon of self-destruction. And so I think the conversation needs to happen, but it just really needs to change in terms of how we approach it. I looked at an episode that you did a couple weeks ago, Tom, and it was an episode about a negligent discharge confession. Mm-hmm. And you talked about how no one was shot, nothing, because you always had your firearm pointed in a safe direction. But you really emphasized remaining vigilant when training and shooting. And I know that that's a huge emphasis in the firearms culture. And so when a veteran, for example, comes and talks to a clinician like me, we have to be mindful and respectful of that piece of this culture and not sort of come out of the gate saying, do you own firearms and how are you storing them? As though firearms owners aren't safe or aren't thoughtful about the use and storage of their firearms.
Okay. Okay. It seems to me, and I'm looking at your book and reading through parts of it so far, I haven't finished it. It's actually designed for at least two audiences, or maybe three, for the support group, families and friends of warriors, the clinicians who may not actually know how to address this, and then maybe even the warriors themselves.
Yeah.
Would that be fair?
Totally, right on the money. I tried to write it for all three because there's so many disconnects in this conversation. It's an emotionally loaded conversation, literally, with high stakes if we get it wrong. And so clinicians want to do the right thing for their patients. Family members may have some concerns when someone's not doing well and not really know how to broach the topic. And then warriors themselves, often, you know, they hear the statistics about suicides and firearms and they say, what does that have to do with me?
Mm.
What does that do with my firearm? So the way that they perceive the approach we often take is that it's like asking a woman of a certain age how old she is or how much she weighs.
Okay.
You know, it's
I get that.
Deeply disrespectful and intrusive for people that are strongly identified with their firearms.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we don't recognize the meaning of it psychologically, I'll give you an example, Tom. So in a military context, you may know this, but many people don't really understand that when someone loses access to a firearm, it's something that someone with rank or authority does to you because they no longer trust you with that firearm.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get flagged or when you have a firearm removed, there is a lot of social consequence that happens. You might get pulled out of your unit or put on a different set of duties.
Mm-hmm.
And it can ostracize you from your tribe very quickly. And so it's one of the most sort of shame-inducing experiences that warriors have. So when they come into a clinic after discharge and a clinician says, do you own firearms? How are you storing them? There's this perception that that clinician has some motivation or power to remove their access to their firearms. Even if there's no thought in the mind of that clinician to do so,
There's
a perception of that, and that matters.
Well, let me do this. I mean, we're not going to have time to go through this. I mean, we're trying to do in a few minutes what we should be able to devote several hours to. The book is titled Warrior by Shauna Springer, PhD, How to Support Those Who Protect Us, for the families, the friends, for those who are involved, from clinicians, anybody who's dealing with this. The book's available now, right?
Yes.
Okay, Amazon, I take it?
Available in ebook, online, and I'm about to do the audio version of the book.
Wonderful. Doc Springer, thank you so much. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for bringing this to our attention and for letting me spend a little bit of time trying to expose this to a lot of folks, because this is our community. We've got to take care of our own.
That's right. Thank you for having me on, Tom. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. You take care. All right, 866-TALK-GUN. Thank you to our listeners for letting me go down that road. I think it's important, and as I say, this is our community. We have to take care of our own, but to do that, we have to have the tools. The book is titled Warrior, How to Support Those Who Protect Us by Shauna Springer, PhD. We'll be right back.
A passion for shooting and hunting has driven product innovation at Hodgdon Powder Company since 1947. Innovations like black powder substitutes, muzzle-loading pellets, and smokeless powder features like anti-copper fouling agents or temperature insensitivity. A family business from the beginning, Hodgdon Powder Company is the largest U.S. supplier of smokeless black powder and black powder substitute propellants distributed under the Hodgdon, IMR, Winchester, Pyrodex, 777, and GOX brands. Hodgdon Powder Company, the gunpowder people.
Get ready for a bodacious giveaway from Gun Talk, Glock, Crossbreed Holsters, and Lipsies. In 1982, the very first Glock was approved for use by the Australian military. Up until today, no U.S. civilian had a chance to own that Glock P80. Well, you do now. The Glock P80 is a gnarly exclusive retro gun from lipsiesguns.com. The Glock P80 is similar to the Gen 1 G17, but this one comes with extras. The original Glock plastic Tupperware case, a special Glock overbox with certificate of authenticity, and of course, it's the only P80 Glock offered in the U.S. Go to guntalk.com/win to enter. One winner will receive the Glock P80 pistol, a Crossbreed Holsters prize pack, and a loaded Lipsy swag bag. Enter to win at guntalk.com/win. It's so rad. That's guntalk.com/win.
In 2020, Brownells continues its tribute to Eugene Stoner, the legendary designer of the AR-15, AR-180, and more. The What Would Stoner Do 2020 rifle answers the question of what Stoner would have done with modern lightweight materials. Inspired by another Stoner design, Brownells BRN-180 lower receivers help complete firearms optimized for folding stocks or pistol braces. Visit Brownells.com today and pay tribute to one of America's greatest firearm engineers.
Well, get ready to go hunting. Been sighted in my rifle, got it ready. And then I went online and found a ballistic calculator, put in the ballistic coefficient, the bullet weight, the caliber, the velocity. I sighted in, and I'm shooting a 280 actually improved. That is kind of halfway between a 280 Remington and a 7mm Remington Magnum. About 150 feet per second faster than the 280 Remington, and roughly 150 feet per second slower than the 7mm Remington Magnum. Call it a 7 mag light, if you prefer. I've sighted in 3 inches high. And I get it. I understand. That's kind of old school. But I'm using a 2.5 to 8 scope on it. It doesn't have dial-ups. It doesn't have adjustable turrets. If I were shooting it more, and maybe I would put a different scope on it and have it set up to sight in exactly at 100. And then when I use a laser rangefinder, and if it says it's 250 or it's 350, then I could just dial it up. Sometimes there's not enough time to do that. There's a deer. There's an elk. The window is going to be 5 seconds, 10 seconds. by sighting in 3 inches high, and I want to kind of go over this because a lot of folks know this, but you may not be aware of it. Obviously, you have a trajectory. Just like when you throw a rock or a baseball, it goes up in an arc and comes back down. The bullet does the same thing. It only rises. People say, well, bullets rise when you shoot them. Well, they only rise because you're pointing the barrel up. Okay. It goes up a little bit. And so what you do is you set up, if you had it pointed straight, level, the bullet would start dropping immediately. By sighting in 3 inches high at 100 yards, I'm looking at my ballistic tables right here, at 3 inches, I'm only down a half of an inch. Now, at 200 yards, okay, at 300 yards, I'm down a half an inch. At 200 yards, I'm actually up 3.2 inches. So I'm still 3 inches high. But here's the thing. I can hold straight on a deer or an elk, and 3 inches is just not very much. It's basically point blank. So I can hold on to, 350 yards, where I'm 5.5 inches low, and not have to worry about it. At 400 yards, I use my laser rangefinder, zap it, it's 400 yards, it's going to drop 11 inches. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to still hold it on hair. That's my basic rule, hold on hair. But I'm going to hold about 3 inches down from the back line. Now I have 18 inches of drop to play with, maybe a little bit more. So out to 400 yards, I don't have to aim high or anything else. And frankly, beyond 400 yards, I may not take the shot. It's old school, but it's simple. And if you don't want to go with the whole adjustable turrets and all, you could do that way. But it is important to have a good laser rangefinder because we are basically really terrible at guessing distances and guessing ranges. And what you may think is 300 may be 600. And if that's the case, you're going to miss. Simple as that. Number's 866-TALK-GUN. Line one, Kathy is with us out of Commerce City, Colorado. Hey, Kathy, you're on Gun Talk. How can we help you?
Well, I am a brand new handgun owner.
Okay.
And I'm an older woman. Mm-hmm. So all of this is brand new to me, and someone recommended the Mantis X shooting system to learn to first be able to dry fire and practice at home.
Mm-hmm.
But then also there's one of the more advanced parts of that system where you can actually take it to the range and practice, and it checks your recoil analysis and does things like that. And I'm wondering what you think about the system in general, and then is it worth the extra money to get the model that does the recoil analysis and a few other things that I don't even understand?
Okay. First of all, let me back up. What handgun do you have?
I got a Smith & Wesson 9mm Shield EZ.
Nice. Very nice. Okay. Excellent choice. Okay, yes, I think the Mantis X system is good. Part of the problem right now is it's a little bit hard to find ammo, and so you could do a lot of dry firing. What you're going to be working on a lot with this, with your dry firing, and it is the part that is hard to get people to pay attention to, is the trigger manipulation, because it's not careful aiming that makes you a good shot. It's good trigger manipulation that makes you a good shot. And that is difficult to address, to see, to correct when you're shooting live ammo because the recoil covers everything up. You just say, well, I'm just not shooting well. Well, you know, you're yanking the trigger. That's where a good instructor would say, here's what you're doing. But with the Mantis X system, you can see that and work on that. Now, having said that, understand this, that when you get out to the range and you start shooting the gun and it starts to recoil, you're going to have a tendency to yank that trigger. We call it anticipating. You try to pull the trigger a little bit faster before the recoil. It's like, bang, So going back and forth between live fire at the range and using the Mantis X system for dry firing is really good. I cannot address whether this additional module, whatever it is worthwhile. I've not used it. I would almost offer that you might... Do you have access to a shooting range that has an instructor in your area?
I'm sure. I'm in the Denver metro area, so yes.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, if you're in the Denver area, I'm going to tell you where to go, okay?
Oh, okay.
Centennial Gun Club.
Okay.
It's a great, great shooting range. If you've not been there, it is a terrific shooting range. Contact them. Tell them I sent you. They probably won't know who the heck I am. That's okay. but no, it's a really wonderful first-class indoor shooting range. And they have instructors there. And, yeah, the Centennial Gun Club, I think you would really enjoy going there. So I would incorporate the Mantis X system with some training there, some shooting, go back and forth. It's going to work fine. And by the way, you have chosen a really good pistol. We literally just bought one of those for my wife, and she loves it. And she's an experienced shooter.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, after you do all of this stuff, give us a call in a few weeks or a month or so and let us know how it's going, if you would.
All right. I sure will. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Kathy. Let's see. Let's do this. We do have time. James, line two, Corpus Christi, Texas. James, I got about a minute and a half. Go for it with this range report.
Yeah, I got a new Springfield Ronin Commander Link.
Ooh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. There were a few sharp edges, particularly on the safety, that I had to do a little deburring on just to keep from cutting the hand up. But And this thing, I put 600 rounds through it this morning. I'm here at the bench cleaning it right now. I put 600 rounds through it, and I was keeping all my shots, 15, 20 yards on a 8-inch paper plate. No problem. I mean, this thing for a defensive gun is an awesome machine.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, the Ronin, it's a forged frame 1911 from Springfield Armory.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the Commander is the alloy frame, so it's a little lighter.
Okay.
The other thing is I've got a quick range report on the chronograph.
All right, tell me quick. I literally have 20 seconds. Go.
Okay. Yeah, the thing is really cool. It Bluetooths to your phone, and it downloads all the data to your phone, and you can keep it stored in files. You don't have to write it down or keep track of it.
And what's the brand on it?
Pro Chrono.
Okay. Very good. I appreciate that. Love getting the range reports. Thank you, sir. 600 rounds before he starts listening to Gun Talk. That's a good morning with a 1911. I'm here to tell you, those are really nice pistols. Just love shooting those things. 866-TALK-GUN. What have you been shooting? We love getting those range reports. All right, the magic number here is 866-TALK-GUN or Tom Talk Gun. If you call that number, you'll be on the air with me. We'll talk about, well, almost anything. Guns, optics, ammo, safe gun handling, self-defense with guns, trap, skeet, sporting clay. It doesn't matter. If it has to do with guns, we'll talk about it here. Again, 866-TALK-GUN. Jesse is called in out of Aztec, New Mexico. Jesse, thank you for your patience and holding. How are you?
I'm good, Tom. How are you?
Excellent. How can we help you today?
Well, I'm calling about the doctor that was your speaker in the last session.
Uh-huh.
I'm 100% disabled Marine vet, and every time I go in to see my psychiatrist at the VA, who's quite nice, but one of their standard questions is exactly what she said. Do you own guns? How many and how do you store them? And she is 100% right. When they ask you that question, it feels like all your trust in them is completely evacuated from your system. You just, all of a sudden, instead of let's talk about, how'd you get shot and how do you feel and those kind of things, they're talking about your personal life and having just the rug jerked out from underneath you and wanting you to just close up right then and there.
Have you ever told the counselor, the person you're talking with, how you feel about those questions?
I have. And it's a standard format that pops up on their screen that they have to ask.
What do you say? I mean, is it okay for you to say that's none of your business?
I do.
You do, okay. I'm not surprised.
I exactly what I do, Tom. I say, even as you build up trust with them, you're not willing to let that feeling out of your body with the, everything that we see every day with everyone wanting to take our guns away, even though right. We're not violent, we're not horrible criminals. it's just that it erodes their trust in the system.
And the person that you're talking to has no ability to not go there because that's the form that's on the computer.
Exactly. Exactly. There's a series of questions that they ask you at every VA meeting, and it takes about a minute and a half to 2 minutes to go through this question list. And I look them square in the eye, Tom, and I lie.
Well, you know what my dad always used to tell me? He says, it's not a sin to tell a lie to somebody who's not entitled to know the truth.
Exactly. I met your father when I was 7 years old at Camp Perry.
No, really?
I did. My dad was in the Marine Corps shooting at Camp Perry, mm-hmm. and your dad was there just talking with his buddies, and I was 5 or 6, and I remember distinctly because I had seen his articles in the hunting magazines that my dad got.
Right.
And it was one of those minutes I remember from just being a kid. Oh,
wow.
This is great. So cool.
That is cool. Well, Jesse, I'm going to remind you that... And I'm not trying to put anything on you here, but this may be a book that you would like to take a look at. The title of it is Warrior, How to Support Those Who Protect Us. It's by Shauna Springer. Paperback, you can get it in ebook form or paperback, whatever you want to do. But it's a good book. I'm looking through it and going, okay, this has got a lot of good stuff in it. And whether it's for you or... You know, I'm tempted to say, hey, get 2 copies and give one to your counselors, you know.
That might not be a bad idea. Or I just read, because I ordered it. I pulled over off the side of the road and ordered it before I called you.
Oh, my.
And I will read it and then take it to her.
Excellent. That is excellent. Well, thank you for the call. Thank you for your service. Thanks for passing on your thoughts on this and letting us know what's going on when you're... going into the VA, what's happening there. Jesse, again, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And I'm delighted you got to meet Dad way back when you were just a little kid. That's cool.
All right. Thank you very much. And your call screener is unbelievable.
Don't say that. She gets a big head whenever somebody says that. It's just terrible. We have to put up with Michelle anyway. You know, it's tough. All right. Thanks,
Tom,
so much.
You have a great day.
All right. You too. Yeah. And if anybody wants to hear more of Michelle, about Michelle, our call screener, check out the after show. That's the extra part of the show we do that becomes just podcast. And we do all the segments of Gun Talk Radio that air, you know, they air on radio, they become podcasts. But then we do this extra part we call the after show. Wherever you get podcasts, you can find Gun Talk. Tell you what, quick break here. Darren, don't go anywhere. We're going to get to you. 866-TALK-GUN. We have room for more calls. Call us right now. We'll chat about this, that, and the other thing.
Our Honey Badger defense line features a new 357 127 grain load. Performance specifications are 1,365 feet per second from a 6-inch revolver and 1,900 feet per second from an 18-inch carbine barrel. Since this projectile is a precision machine monolithic bullet, there's absolutely no chance of bullet failure due to overexpansion, fragmentation of the bullet. We think you'll appreciate the Honey Badger for the least complicated reason in the world. It simply works. Black Hills Ammunition, the power of performance.
Are you looking for a place to shoot? The National Shooting Sports Foundation has a great website called wheretoshoot.org. It's the largest database of shooting ranges on the internet. It's also a great resource for shooters where you can find video tips, printable targets, and a lot more. Find it online at wheretoshoot.org. And while you're there, download their free iPhone app. That's wheretoshoot.org.
Introducing the all-new St. Victor from Springfield Armory. Our versatile line of battle-ready configurations designed for serious shooters and built on the rock-solid St. platform for unwavering reliability. Available in carbine-length rifle, SBR, and pistol configurations, each St. Victor is purpose-built and loaded with features to deliver ultimate performance under extreme conditions. The all-new St. Victor from Springfield Armory. Never a victim. Always the victor.
A let's go out to the high desert, North Bend, Oregon. I love that part of the world. Anyway, Darren's with us out there. Hey, Darren, range report, what you been shooting?
Well, I bought a brand new gun, the Remington Model 700, the NRA American Hunter collaboration that Remington did.
Okay.
Right out of the box, I took it to, not to the range, but took out a dollar bill out of the pocket and went to run it down the barrel, see if it was free-floated, and what was it? Not even free-floating at all.
Why do you care?
Well, I like to have a free-floated barrel if I want to shoot on bolt action.
Why?
Well, it's more accurate.
No, it's not.
Okay, well.
It's actually, I mean, that's the point of me. That's why I'm asking this, because everybody said, I want a free-floated barrel. I said, why? A lot of times I can make them shoot a lot better. I can take a free-floated barrel and make them shoot better by putting some pressure on the fore end.
Well, yeah, it had a lot of pressure on the fore end when I took it off the top.
All right, so what did you do? Did you free-float it?
Well, I sanded it all out, got it all nice, and now it looks like got a hot dog in a bun at the end of the barrel, at the end of the stock. And the doggone recoil lug is bottoming it out on the stock now.
Yeah. How's it shoot?
Well, I still haven't got it on the stock. But it's not teeter-tottering on yet.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, you started tinkering with it before you shot it. I mean, thing may have shot great.
It might have, but I got most of my guns are all free-floating barrels. I mean,
I know. I mean, that's kind of almost like, it's almost like a religion deal. I got to free-float my barrel. I say, you know, let me do this. I'm going to cut up a business card. I'm going to put a slice of it between the barrel and the forearm in that little channel and just put a little bit of pressure when you crank it down on that barrel way out there. And I have seen groups go from 2 inches down to an inch or even less just by doing that.
Hmm.
I know. Yeah, you're going, oh.
Well, I haven't seen that, but I haven't seen everything.
Well, interesting. Well, I tell you what, after you get a chance to shoot it, when you finally get it out there, give us a call back and let us know how it works out, okay?
All right.
Thanks, Darren. Appreciate that. I want to go talk to Bill in Denver. He's on one. Hey, Bill, thank you for your patience. I'm glad we could get you back on here.
Yeah, thank you very much. My question is, I just bought an AR-15, and mm-hmm. I've taken it out and I've shot it a couple of times, and I love it. I want to buy a scope to put on it. Now, I've seen red dot. I've seen all these other types of things, and some of them say 4x32, 1x8. I have no idea what any of that means.
Ah, okay, I can explain that. It's actually pretty easy to understand, okay? Let's work on this. They're obviously with a rifle scope, and actually this goes for binoculars or a spotting scope, whatever. You're looking at some form of magnification, right? To make the image bigger.
Yeah.
Okay, so the question then becomes, how much magnification is it? Is it, if it's a 1x, that means the action, when you look through it, it looks like it's no bigger than it was without the scope. If it's a 2x, it's twice as big or appears to be twice as close. If it's a 5x or a 10x, that's 5 or 10 times bigger image or closer, if you will. And then you get into the whole variable deal. And that's when you get to like the 1.5-8. Well, what that means is, this is a variable magnification, and you can turn a ring on the scope, and the image gets bigger or smaller. So, for instance, if it was a 3-9, that's a very common type of scope, it would be at its lowest setting, it would have a 3x magnification, and at its highest setting, it would have a 9x magnification. All right. I'm going to talk about the other number in just a second, but let me just talk about magnification first, because at first people say, well, more is better. Well, it's actually not always better. As you go to higher magnification, your field of view gets narrower and narrower, which is going to make it harder to find something in the scope. So a wider field of view, a lower magnification, makes a gun faster to shoot. You can see, pick up the target if you're hunting, find the deer better, that kind of thing. More magnification also means more, you can see more visible shake. You're not actually shaking anymore. It just magnifies what's already going on. You can see it better. And so there's that. So question for you. What are you going to be using this AR for? Are you going to hunt with it, or just recreational shooting, or home defense, or what?
Yes.
Yes, all of those. Okay.
Yes, I'd like to do some recreational. I'm not going to go out where I'm going to shoot multiple times, try to get something. I'm just going to be elected, try to get a one shot if I were to go out and try to get a deer.
Okay.
I'm not that kind of a person where I'd do anything like that. But,
okay, I'm going to make a suggestion. Look for something, a scope, somewhere in the range, a variable of 2 to 7. Now, it could be 2.5 to 8, something like that. 1 to 6, something like that. That's going to get you a fairly low number on the lower end, which is low magnification, which is wide view, which if you ended up wanting to use it for home defense or something like that, you'd leave it on that lowest setting. But then if you needed to shoot out at 200 or even 300 yards at a deer, a 6, 7, or 8 power scope on the top end, that would be plenty for that. Okay?
All right.
All right, let's talk about there's another number here. When you get like a 4X32 type scope, the 4 is magnification, and the 32 is the diameter of the objective lens. That sounds really cool and interesting. The objective lens is simply, you got two lenses, one that is close to your eye, one that's closer to the object being viewed. The objective lens is the lens that's not close to your eye. It's on the other end. Here's the deal there. All things being equal, for the most part, the bigger the diameter of that lens, the better it performs in low light. It gathers more light up to a point. There's a point at which it doesn't anymore. But, of course, the scope gets bigger and heavier. So there are trade-offs there as well. But that's what's going on. You got one number that's the magnification, and the other number is the diameter of the objective lens in millimeters.
Okay. All right. Well, now I got something to think about, and I got a little bit more reading I can do, which maybe it'll make a little bit more sense.
Good deal. Yeah, you take that, now you can run with that, and you start to study, and you say, okay, now I'm starting to understand. The other thing you can do is go to the websites of somebody like Loophole or Sig Sauer, that people that make scopes. They'll have descriptions of those on their websites and how to figure out what you need, and they'll have recommendations for you as well. So there's a lot of help out there online. So I wish you luck. You're going to have a ton of fun. Yeah, AR-15s are lots of fun. Thank you, sir. I appreciate the call. A quick update. I was talking with a friend of mine yesterday, a young man in his mid-20s. He built a really lovely AR. It's an AR-10, actually, a 6.5 Creedmoor. Great trigger, great muzzle brake, everything custom. It's probably, if you priced it all out, it'd probably be a $3,000 rifle. Took it out at the range. He had a new shooter with him, and he put her on the gun 600 yards, shooting at a 5-inch steel target with a little bit of a wind. Of course, he's a good instructor. She hit it the first shot, hit it the second shot, and then just starts banging on it. And she is hammering a 5-inch gong at 600 yards and having a ball. That is what an accurate rifle is all about. And I'm going to tell you, there's just something pretty cool. I call it's the ultimate remote control. I push the button here and something happens way out there. And when you get a super rifle that's dialed in, and frankly an instructor or a spotter who can call wind for you, it becomes ridiculously easy to hit things like that. You know, a good barrel, custom barrel, a really good trigger, knowing what you're doing. It's just fun. I mean, just love those things. So, yes, AR-15s are super accurate if you get the right ones, if you build them correctly, and you can buy them that way as well. Our number is 866-TALK-GUN. If you got a range report for us, we'd love to know what you've been shooting, what's been working for you. I'm Tom Gresham. We'll be right back in just a minute with more Gun Talk. Straight to the phones. Ken, Medford, Oregon, line 3. Hey, Ken, what you got there?
Hey, Tom, I've got a Smith & Wesson Sigma. It's actually my son's pistol. It's a 40 caliber,
mm-hmm.
and it's doing something really odd. is not firing every round, and it's not consistent. It's not like every third round or every fifth round. It's just random. When it doesn't fire, it leaves a small mark on the primer, but it does not punch the primer.
Does it? Have you tried different brands of ammo?
Yes.
Okay, so that's that. Well, clearly it's an issue. Have you contacted Smith & Wesson?
No, I haven't. I took it apart and cleaned it and thought maybe that was just the issue, that it was dirty.
Sure.
But it just seems to do the same thing. It's an older pistol.
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with the Sigma. It was a very simple, a fairly inexpensive pistol that they made for a few years. Not a bad pistol. It was a pretty, I thought it was a pretty good value for the money, actually.
It's been a good gun. It's just been doing some crazy stuff. And I don't know that much about semi-automatics. I'm kind of new to that.
Right.
Revolver guy.
And you're right. Cleaning it would be the first step. The other would be, and I don't know if you know how to take the slide apart, get to the firing pin. If you don't, you might want to get it to a gunsmith, because I'm thinking that could be, I'm just thinking, if you're getting light primer strikes, you could have accumulated gunk in there or even grease. You might want to do that and get it to a gunsmith to have that cleaned and checked. And if that doesn't take care of it, then please contact Smith & Wesson, because they're going to stand behind their products, and more than likely they're going to say, hey, send it in, we'll take care of it.
Okay, because I wasn't sure, being the fact that it's such an older gun, it's not something that's been made anymore.
It's amazing how these companies stand behind things. I think they're going to say, yeah, send it back in, we'll take a look at it.
Okay, sounds great.
Good deal. Thanks, Ken. I appreciate it. Yeah, I actually had that happen last week before. Old pair of binoculars, a 20-year-old pair of Swarovskis. And the little loop thing that you put the strap on broke. Sent it back in to Swarovski, and they sent me an estimate. They said, yeah, we'll fix it for free, but oh, by the way, we looked over everything, and the lenses are scratched. It's cosmetic. It probably doesn't affect the optical quality, but if you want... And this is a 20-year-old pair of binoculars. We'll replace all the lenses for $175. And this is probably, $2,000 pair of binoculars now, if you had to replace them. That seemed like a good deal. So I went, yeah, sure, we're going to do that. It's amazing how these companies do stand behind things. Eric's called us with a follow-up from last week on this Escort Bullpup 12-gauge. Eric, what happened when you went out and shot this thing?
Oh, my son and I traded off through a box shells, and we probably should have gone with a 2.5-inch bird shot, like we kind of talked about, but we shot 3-inch. The 3 BB is their high velocity.
Oh boy!
We're shooting at we set up, just kind of look at pattern. We set up at about 12 yards.
Yeah.
The peep sights up there in the rail, real accurate. There's no muzzle rush, but it's kind of a sledgehammer push. And rapid fire would set you backwards.
Yeah, I got 20 seconds. So, bottom line, was it fun? Did you hate it? How did it feel?
Love it. No, love it. Love it. It's accurate. Fun to shoot. It's about a 3-inch maybe pattern out of 12 yards. So, it puts a hurt on whatever you're shooting.
There you go. And that's kind of my point. Thank you, Eric. I appreciate that. When you're shooting a shotgun for self-defense, it doesn't cover the whole room. It shoots a small pattern. You got to aim it. You got to have sights. Hey, if you want to continue the conversation, or if you're on hold right now, don't go anywhere. The after show follows this. Call me right now, 866-TALK-GUN. If you haven't heard the after show before, you can find it wherever you get your podcast. Now, that means if you've missed a gun talk, you can pick it up as a podcast as well. Go out and do some shooting. Be safe. Take care of your family. We'll see you next week.